Welcome to episode 3 of You Like Hoops. I'm your host, Chase Lucas. We are excited that you're joining us. It is a week of firsts. We have several firsts this week, mostly related to our guest. We have our first native Memphian, our first current Memphis resident, our first professional media member that actually does this on a vocational basis, and our first, I said last week that it would be our first in-studio, and that in-studio would be heavily in air quotes. I apologize. We're almost kind of in an actual studio. So anyway, we are recording in person for the first time, so we're excited, and I will get into it introducing the guest. You may know him as the co-host of Wolo and Peter in the Morning on Sports 56. You may know him as the author of The Numbers Game for the Commercial Appeal, or you may know him as the host of Locked On Grizzlies podcast.
Like
he
that.
Is
that was good.
Peter
like
Edmiston. Peter, how's it going?
Chase, what's up, man? This is a good. You got to. Can I just tell the people listening that Chase has got a excellent setup. Your setup makes mine look really pitiful. Podcasting wise, you got this. You got a great little digital recorder. You got two mics with stands. I mean, this is like next level stuff. I mean, this. I apologize. Our studio here is our like little prep space. But it does have some soundproofing. It is sort of a studio. It was at one time an actual studio. So, yeah, this is pretty close to the real deal. But I'm impressed with your setup, Chase.
Oh, I appreciate it. We are trying really hard here at You Like Hoops. It's a one-man show, but, you know, we're hoping the equipment does the work.
Can I ask you, should I say, when I hype it, should I say, you like hoops? Or you like hoops? Like, well, give me what's my enunciation?
Okay, so I heard on Locked On that you did a few different types of it. I liked all of them. I think in my original vision, it was based on the guest. So on down the line, I want to have some people who are not necessarily tied to basketball, and for them, it would be you like hoops. And you know, for everyone else, you know, if it's a little bit of a you know a seductive episode, it could be a you like hoops. You know, it can be anything you need it to be. So any which way you pronounce it is the right way.
Like hoops.
Yeah, there you go. There's
right?
No wrong answers
right?
here.
I can't wait for you love hoops. That's coming. Is that coming? Yeah. Is that later on? Are we?
Yeah. Well, that's the spinoff. But okay, you know, we got to get this off the ground first. So we'll start at the beginning. It's kind of where we start. Yours will be a little different. So the first two, we focused a lot on the fandom side and what it's like being outside of Memphis. For you, you can correct me anywhere I get this info wrong, but you're a native Memphian.
That's correct. So far, so good.
Yeah. You have a radio veteran, been doing this since early 2000s-ish.
That's okay. Correct. Yep. Two for two.
And you were obviously, if those were right, then this one's right. You were around when the Grizzlies first came to town.
That's correct, yeah.
So from your point of view, I guess give us a little bit of what you thought when the Grizzlies came to town. Were you super into the NBA before the Grizzlies came to town? Was that something that evolved because they arrived? Where did your NBA fandom stand at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I was always into the NBA, Chase, but I never really, I think most of the people that are listening who are native Memphians would probably share my view that I don't think any of us ever actually thought there would be professional sports in Memphis. I don't think that was ever even a possibility. I mean, I remember, you know, growing up and we had University of Memphis basketball and football and all that, and we had, you know, SEC stuff and whatever, but it's just so different. I mean, people growing up now would just have no idea what it was like to be a sports fan then. I was an NBA fan, but you had to find a team elsewhere. You know, I was always an Orlando Magic fan because of Penny, you know, and so that was, you watch Penny and Shaq and Nick Anderson and Dennis Scott and those guys, and then, you know, I mean, you can't help but love Michael Jordan and the whole thing. But I was probably more of a college basketball fan, too, because of the Tigers, and that's changed over the course of the Grizzlies being here now. It's just a different environment. So when it actually happened back in 2000 and 2001, all the buildup to it and all the rumor and all the speculation and then it actually happening, it was like, I mean, I can't tell you how bizarre it was to think like this is like Memphis and there's like an NBA team here. It's like there's a professional team with Memphis across their chest. I mean, there are kids now, you know, that are going to be graduating from high school that have never known life without it, but it's substantially different. So, yeah, it was I was always a fan of the NBA, but clearly this is, you know, taking it to the next level.
Yeah, I always say I remember finding out. This tells you how much things have changed from then to now. I found out, and I'm sure word broke elsewhere, but I found out from SportsCenter that they officially got the team, which the thought of finding anything out, especially of that magnitude, just because I had SportsCenter on, is just so different than anything now. I
mean, no, we were talking about that on my show today because Like, you just don't watch SportsCenter like the same way. I mean, I don't anyway. I don't watch highlights. I don't. I mean, it used to be that like you wouldn't have, like they would hide the result. You know, the highlights were like a spoiler. You didn't want to spoil what the outcome was actually going to be. Like, oh, who won the game? Like, oh, we can't tell you yet. Let's watch 3 minutes of highlights. No one does that. No one does that anymore. No one watches SportsCenter like that anymore. And you know that I think it's great for those of us that you know traffic and internet stuff. But it does tell you like how different life was like for people. Just if you're a sports fan, it's just so different. Like it's affected University of Memphis. It's affected you know all the other entertainment options in Memphis. I certainly think it's better, but it's definitely different than it was.
Yeah. So I mentioned that you do the numbers game for the commercial appeal, Locked On, which is this year, first year of that. How old is numbers game? How long have you been doing that?
That's a good question. Probably 4 or 5 years now.
Okay.
I would think we was right at the end of Rudy Gay. So whenever that was.
So was that something you were into on the analytics side and stuff, or was that a hole you just saw and thought, hey, I can fill it? How did the whole numbers game thing come about?
It was funny. I have to give credit to the oft maligned but dear friend of mine, Ron Tillery, who I used to bombard him with stuff, and he has very low tolerance for that sort of thing, which irritates a lot of people, including me sometimes, but that's just the way it is. But he would always kind of say, like, we gotta figure out a way to make this, get this in the paper. We gotta figure out a way. And he doesn't, it's not his thing. So he's not gonna write that. He doesn't wanna write it. And so I have writing experience, but I hadn't written in a while. But I pitched it to them, especially, you know, when they expanded all their digital stuff, and they still are doing that. And they liked it. And, you know, I'm able to, you know, hopefully synthesize some stuff from different, you know, outlets and different sources and kind of make it into like a narrative. That's kind of the whole point of it. It's a little bit, you know, it's kind of like, I don't want it to just be dry stuff. I like to tell a story with it, but I really think the numbers are underserved in some respects, or I think they're not as understood. And certainly back when I started, I think there's been like a much bigger proliferation in the last 3 or 4 years. But back when I started, I think it wasn't written about in the same way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about. If we're talking 4 years, that's a lifetime in terms of people understanding or at least being tolerant of the analytics stuff and just being aware of them.
Yeah, being conversant with that stuff like offensive rating, defensive rating.
So how much has that changed the way you approach writing it, or has it at all?
I mean, it really hasn't changed it that much. I still have, you know, I kind of work. You work in different ways. Like, you know, you have a supposition about the way you think something has gone down or why it's happened or what's happened. And then you can work backwards to either prove or disprove your hypothesis. You know, I kind of take it like scientific method thing. Like, you know, you want to get your, like, here's what I think is going on. Mm-hmm. And maybe even, you know, here's why I think it's going on. Am I right or am I wrong? And let me go and see. And sometimes when I follow the trail, I'm just flat wrong. And then I write about, you know, that I was wrong, and here's the other approach. Or if I'm right, I write about what it was. Or sometimes it takes you down a dark alley and you have to just back up and try another approach. It's not always clear cut, you know. Yeah. But I always look at it like from a legal standpoint. Like I have an assertion or something that I'd like to prove to you.
Sure.
I would like to show you over the course of the next 800 to 1,000 words or however many I write that this is something that is plausible and believable and literal, and this is why it's happening. And if through a combination of video and stats and whatever, if I can do that, then I'm successful. Or even if you may have a totally, you may disagree, but if you look at my premise, just like any other like legal argument, sometimes they're perfectly reasonable legal arguments on either side of a particular issue. There may be a completely reasonable argument on the other side of whatever it is that I'm discussing. And, you know, like when Tony Allen, I called out Tony Allen earlier in the year for, you know, gambling too much of poor defense, and he didn't like it. And we had a little, you know, we hashed it out a little bit in the locker room and all that stuff.
Sure.
But there was a reasonable analysis on the other side of it that he's hurt and that they're this and now they're playing with different players, different system, et cetera, et cetera. That's fine. That's not my point. My point is to get you to think about and to hopefully back up that thought with some data that works. If that makes any sense. Like, that's kind of
No, it does. Yeah. Locked On. So, first of all, just let me say, if anybody listening who doesn't listen to Locked On or isn't aware, I really love that podcast, and not just blowing smoke up your ass because you're on my podcast, but honestly, when I first heard the idea of sort of what Locked On was and knew you'd be doing it, It did not sound like just my personal taste or something I'd be listening to a lot, but I think you vary it enough. And the other thing, I think people underrate this with podcasts, and this is just my opinion, more so from non-sports podcasts I listen to. I'm trying to do this with this one. I appreciate ones that post regularly in terms of if you're a weekly, same day.
Right.
And then time. I think timing is, I think that's a huge part of what made Dunked On what it is, was it was this thing that it just happened and then it's fresh for you the next morning. And that's almost always when I catch yours, it's first thing in the morning. It's something I throw on, you know, the speaker when I'm in the shower or going to work. And it's, you know, you've got your interview episodes now and again, and then you've just got kind of the breakdown. And there's a lot of stuff, especially with Grind City. You can get, you know, the video of what the players interviews and all that stuff, but it kind of puts it in a nice little package where I don't have to work too hard. And like I said, it's just the audio I can throw in the car in the morning. But my big question is, how do you, the time? I just mentioned everything you do, but every day, that just sounds really taxing.
It's a lot more taxing than I thought it would be, honestly. Yeah. Like, but thank you for saying that. First of all, I appreciate that because I'm still figuring out what I think, you know, I was a huge listener to podcasts myself. I listened to tons of non-sports podcasts and, you know, that's what I do. I mean, mostly I'll listen to some radio. But you know, doing radio, like you kind of don't want to listen.
Sure.
It's just, you get, you know, you're worn down with the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I'm kind of, I got to move on to something else. And so I kind of had the idea of like, you know, making sure we do it on a regular basis. Cause I know exactly what you're talking about. Like when I update my feed, I expect this to be here on Monday, this to be here on Tuesday, this to be here every day or whatever. And if it's not, it's like, oh, you know, it kind of bums me out or like it messes your schedule up. You get a little routine that you're going. So I want to do that. As far as the time, and it is a big time crunch. I'm not going to lie to you, especially because I have to record it. I record it nights. I have to record it nights because I got family. I got two small kids, my wife. You know, the only time I can really record is relatively late when the kids are asleep and, you know, my wife is doing something else or whatever.
Your radio show starts at what time?
My radio show starts at 7.
Okay.
But, you know, now some of this is you can double dip because, you know, we talk a lot about the Grizzlies on the show.
Right.
So that works out. You could double dip there. But I do have to prep and stuff. And it's just it's just managing your time is all it is. Like, and not sleeping. That's another aspect you can do that. You can go, like last night, I think I slept like 2 or 3 hours because my kid didn't sleep. So that happens too, and you just have to suck it up. But I made a commitment for this year, and then I'll see what, you know, for next year, just kind of have to reevaluate and see if I can do it more efficiently or change it or whatever, see how folks like it. I've gotten, you know, really good response. I think people dig it. I think people understand, like you're talking about, you know, doing this stuff. Like, I mean, I don't know, man. It's really tricky to generate your own energy when you're doing, like,
absolutely.
If people make sense, like it's like doing a radio show, you're in a studio, so you got, at the very least, I have whoever you're doing the show with or even nobody, and you have a producer and you have your live, so you have texts, calls, some kind of feedback happening at that moment, things are happening because it's in the middle of the day or the morning or whatever, you could, stuff's, it's just energy, so you could feed off that as a broadcaster, no problem, bing bang boom. When you're at your house or in your studio or wherever you're doing this, car, people recording all kinds of weird places, it's just you and a microphone, and microphones suck your energy up. You have to like project even harder with microphones because they just do, and you to do that by yourself in your house, in my case, I got a little studio set up kind of thing, but nothing fancy. It's really hard. That's way harder than I thought it would be compared to radio. Like, I thought it'd just be like, oh, no, just like, you know, I can record just like I do with radio stuff.
Sure.
Totally different. And then the editing and stuff. So it is more time consuming, but I really am gratified by the response. I'm gratified that people actually like it. It always amazes me that people listen to it at all, which is awesome. I don't know, man. I'm trying. That's all. Just like you're doing it. Just like a lot of folks. And there's great content, man. I got to say, like, you know, just so much good stuff. I'm of the opinion that the rising tide lifts all boats. We don't have to compete, and I think there's plenty of market for it out there. So I'm not. I think it's awesome to see people writing great stuff. I love that, you know, like Grizzly Bear Blues. You guys, you know, expand into podcasting, expand into some more advanced, like, you know, stat stuff, which is, you know, that's my alley, but that's great, man. There's plenty of topics. There's plenty of interesting things to discuss.
Yeah.
It's not like one person has the beat on the whole thing. So I welcome it. It's awesome. And, yeah, it's great stuff for me to talk about, too.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, I don't really write on the site anymore, obviously. I think I was supposed to say that at the top. This is part of the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network or something.
Well,
let me say it
for
you. This
is part of the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network.
There you go. We'll clip it out. but even, you know, still being on the email thread of all the writers, that is something I noticed, because obviously Joe has assembled quite a large number of people over there.
You guys just hired like 20 people,
yeah,
right?
And so the amount of things that like I see come through there, and so I know basically what kind of content's going to be coming out a little bit ahead of time. And, you know, there's stuff that I see that I think this is not to my, you know, not in my interests.
Right.
And then that stuff oftentimes does massive numbers in terms of page views and stuff. And it's the stuff that I'm like, oh, okay, this is kind of funny. And then
it's like you were talking about
page.
With the, I saw on Twitter yesterday, I don't know when this is going to drop, so I'll just say Sunday. I saw on Twitter that you were talking about the Knicks experimenting with no sound game, and all the old school sports writers going gaga. Oh my God, I can hear the sounds, the dribble, the squeaks. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. This is what the basketball is all about. This is Nirvana. This is, you know, John Wooden and all this. Okay. And then you rightly note that there's like a bigger market than that. It's great if you're, you know, looking for like a, you know, 35 plus male.
Yeah.
You know, demo, then great. That's going to be your favorite thing. But there are many, many, many other people who go to watch games. My kids, people's kids, you know, family, stuff like that. You got to have something for everybody. I'm with you. Like, that's the same thing with the approach that you guys take, which is like, and honestly, like, I know my stuff, like when I write my numbers game stuff, not often am I going to like break the bank on like page views. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, the commercial appeal is going to, yeah, every now and then. There's a particular story or something I hit that's you know, like perfect for that moment. But that's not why I do it. And I appreciate that they don't put pressure on me to like say you need XYZ page views, because that's never going to be what my stuff does. Mm-hmm. My stuff is more of a niche thing. But I think that's important. I think it's important to serve everybody like that. You guys have stuff, you know, this podcast is maybe not to the hardcore basketball fans liking, or maybe it's to, you know, whatever. Maybe they don't like Dunked On because Dunked On is so damn dry.
Yep.
Maybe they don't like that. I understand that. Maybe my podcast is too nuts and bolts or you know, whatever. That's fine. You know, you have to try to serve as many different people as you can with your network. And that's what I think you guys do a good job of that, because there's plenty of different types of fans out there.
That was the point when I was discussing or mentioned that thing with the whole no sound, no video at the Knicks game. That was the point which you kind of hit on that I was hesitant to make, because I do not have kids and therefore I'm not as qualified as most people. But I'm guessing, just from the kids I do know, like, that's a big part of it. If your kid is entertained, that means you can actually stay there for longer and experience it yourself. And I have to imagine all that extra stuff, just in the difference between going to like a college game where there's a lot less production behind it. I mean, I've been with kids that I thought they're going to hate this, and then you get there and all the production stuff is what lights them up. So it's just, you know, your base is definitely not all of us basketball nerds who are recording a podcast on a Monday.
I got to tell you, like, hate's a strong word. Okay. I have grown to hate Kings of the Court at the Grizzly game. It's the same. I see it. I've seen it hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, it's in wonderful athleticism, incredible. Every game, there's somebody new who hasn't seen it, mm-hmm. and their mind is, oh my God, look at these guys go. They're flipping, they're dunking, this is amazing. I mean, I'm like, oh. But that's, again, this is what you have to accept, and this is what the ops people there do a great job of. And, you know, we get, like, I think media people, too. I don't really classify myself as, like, a media person, like, in that sense. Like, I'm just, you know, I just do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But some people get really caught up in like their particular viewpoint of the game as fully representative of everyone's viewpoint of the game. In that I don't like, you know, a halftime show X, so therefore everybody hates halftime show X.
I think Twitter's been terrible for that.
Oh my God.
I think because I do it too, because not only is it just such a small sample of people of the population who are actually on Twitter, but then even beyond that, you're curating your own tastes follow. And so you think, I see all these people with this opinion, it must be the prevailing one, and I'm guilty of it too, but
it's
horrible. Yeah.
Absolutely. You have this echo chamber thing, and it's a, you know, like a solipsistic thing where you kind of like your own viewpoint becomes, that's it. Like, we're very difficult to get yourself out of that. And when you're writing and when you're having opinions, basketball opinions, whatever it may be with regard to this stuff, or just stupid opinion, new movie, books, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We have this thing now where we're so into what we do, like our own thing, like our own opinions. And it's very tempting. And it's very, like, even on the course of a game, I love to, like, live tweet during the game and stuff, mm-hmm. Whatever's happening, this, that. But you can get on these, like, little self-referential tangents, and you can lose yourself, and you can lose the bigger picture of whatever's going on. You can lose the, your ability to have that proper perspective. And it's very, like, sports writers, like Twitter, when I first started writing, I didn't really do Twitter. I was on Twitter, but it's become a much bigger part of everybody's deal now. You write stuff, and it's like, you wait for, like, oh, who's going to retweet this? Who's going to like this? Who's going to do that? Whatever it is, when you post a pod, it's mm-hmm. like, who's going to like this? Is anyone like this? What about this? If I'm writing about a player, do I at the player? Do I not at the player? All this, these weird questions.
Yeah.
And it has no bearing at all on the quality of whatever the work is that you're doing. Like, you're doing your work, and it used to be that you would write your work, you'd write your game story, you'd write your story, whatever it is, or you do your podcast or do anything, whatever thing you're doing. You do it because you love to do it. You do it to the best of your ability. However it is perceived by the world is how it's perceived by the world. It's just like any other book or whatever work of art, magazine article, et cetera. Once it's out there, people can perceive and find things in it that you may not have even realized that you did. But now it's like, I just wait. I'm thirsting for like that immediate like sugar rush feedback. Like, oh, this guy liked it. This guy retweeted it. And I think all of us have that issue. And all of us have, this only got 10 likes. This only got, whatever your number is that you want. I hate that because I think it takes away from what you're trying to do. Like, just the work itself just needs to be the work. And I have, I have my own issues with that. Like, I have to always just keep reminding myself, like, I just need to let this be.
Yeah.
And it really feeds the worst aspects of it, because then you write for that audience, you write for those clicks, and then it's a bad deal.
Yeah, it's definitely strange. And I think this is true for most people, especially for me. Like, I have no interest in pretty much any social media platform outside of Twitter.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, like, that's the only feedback getting. And so, you're talking about who retweets it, who likes it. That's just the only information you have coming in, which doesn't mean it's the only information that exists.
But you didn't used to have that information.
Yeah, right.
Of any sort. You would just put it out there, and you might hear from, like, somebody the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, oh, I read your piece in the paper, or I listened to your whatever, or I saw this. And that was your feedback. Or maybe the comments. God help you if you read the comments. That was, but there was no, very granular nitpick here. This had X number of views in this hour, and then it spiked down to this, and then it went up to this. Like, that's not healthy
mm-hmm.
for you as a writer or, I hate this term, content creator. That's not healthy for you to worry about that. You just need to do it. It's like the study with the people that wear the Fitbits, and turns out that they lost like 7 pounds fewer, on mm-hmm. average than the people who didn't wear the Fitbits. That granular data is great, but it almost overwhelms you.
Yeah.
You start to tailor your life in a way that's not natural because you're looking at that stuff. I don't want to go off on a tangent here. I can only assume you did not expect the pod to go in this way, but. It is a pet peeve of mine, because it's also something that I struggle with. I realize that I have this, nature of, like, I'm very, like, Pavlovian, like, I'm, oh, I see all, mm-hmm. and I have to just, like, say, all right, stop. That's not good. That's not healthy.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I agree with, most of what you said. And at the same time, I'm on there all the time.
Yep.
And so it's this thing where I think it's really useful and really harmful all at the same time. And, how to piece that balance together
is
certainly haven't figured it out. There you go.
I'm just kidding. Smoking is not useful.
Peter Edmiston, pro smoking.
I'm not. You heard it here first. I do not smoke. I do not advocate. Well, you actually do whatever you want, but you know it's not healthy. So don't. If you're a kid, don't do it. Can I cover myself? Is that good?
I think you're good.
I think you're good.
The disclaimer was good.
Right?
Something you said a second ago, I want to go back to for a second, about the mic sucking energy. That is something I've totally noticed. And just for people listening, I don't know how often we'll be able to do this in person. I'm going to push for it every time we have someone who is local and who might be able to do it.
It's
obviously
better.
I'm not going to not have a guest because they're totally outside of Memphis and I'm never going to be in the same place as them. But when we can, because like you said, it is really hard. It is hard to listen back a lot of times and you feel like your own personality is not what's going into the mic. And even just on a more, you know, technical level, like us sitting here, this is the first one I've done. And I've done in-person podcasts years ago. But there's just a difference between when you've got that internet connection or phone connection and you're kind of trying to listen. Does that person want to make a point? Are they jumping in? As to where we're sitting here, I can see when you're winding up. You can see when I'm trying to jump in and vice versa. Yeah. So hopefully we'll do as many of these as possible. But I've absolutely found that, what you said about that.
No, the radio thing, and that's a radio deal. If you have partners, if you're on the air, you can see. We do so much nonverbal during a show where I might, like, you know, make a little signal to whoever I'm doing the show with that, you know, I've got to do, like, this particular ad read, or I've got another point I want to make, or I want to ask, you know, a follow-up question to a guest that we have, or, you know, things like that. And you can just do hand signals or to the producer, you know, whatever. There's all these little ways that you can and, or you just see people. I mean, you just interact. I mean, you know, you see what somebody wants to do. It just makes it better. So I will say I applaud your – I try to do as many as I can. And, like, when I do interviews, same way, like, I want to be there. Like, it's, you know, and it's important to, like, for establishing relationships, like, when you're with the Grizzlies, like, you know, it's important just to be there to just kind of interact and just talk, just be part of the thing. You know, even if you don't, I would always tell young journalists, don't always record everything. Mm-hmm. Go and, like, just be in person in the locker room and just talk. And don't just talk about basketball. I see this with young reporters now a lot. And, you know, it's true with the players, too, because everyone's very attuned to the phone stuff, and the interactions are different than they were at the beginning. But, you know, just go and talk to a guy about what's going on. Just basketball, non-basketball, whatever. Just small talk. And you'd be amazed at, you know, guys feel commoditized. Like, you know, if you're only in the locker room strictly for the commodity of, like, I'm going to interview you, you're going to talk to me, we're going to record it, and that's going to be it.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Then those relationships – you know, you're working together. It's a working relationship. So you at least want it to be cordial, and, you know, you want to have a good rapport as much as you can. It's not like you're going to, you know, there's not, like, all the secret stuff or anything. It's nothing like that. It's just like, I just want to see what's going on. Like, you know, how's your family? How's your kids? What's going on? You know, I mean, these sorts of small talk things that people kind of overlook are really important to establishing, like, your interviews. Your on-record interviews are better.
Yeah.
When you have that kind of stuff. Just like we're talking, you know, you and I can talk before the show and kind of, you know, set some thing, just say what's going on, and you turn on the mic, it's better than if you just walk in cold and say, wham, like, and start talking.
Yeah.
You know, that's, so I think a lot of people miss that. And that's, I think if you're like a young journalist listening to this, that would be my number one piece of advice, is just to establish those relationships before you turn on the mics and start really, like, hammering somebody.
Yeah, and I just think as a listener and a consumer of a lot of, in the past, a lot of talk radio. Now, I almost exclusively listen to podcasts.
You're Johnny
and
Podcast
stuff.
Over here. Yeah.
And even, well, the thing is with the talk radio, even if you hear, hey, this somebody had a great interview, a great segment, you can just pull that up in podcast form usually. But that's something I've noticed.
We didn't think about that, did we, on the radio side?
Some guys, in terms of players, are just great interviews. And they're kind of, that's just their personality. Same as the regular population. You know, some people are just better in front of a camera or microphone, or just better able to express themselves with their words. I know I listened to someone who covers the Warriors who said that Draymond Green is word smart and Stephen Curry is math smart or something like that. And he said that's why people interview go to Draymond, is because he's going to give us something verbally.
That's true.
And I think you can tell a lot about an interviewer when you get a guy who can be either or. So also some guys, especially young players, it feels like are just a little bit more hesitant. It's new to them. And so they might lock up regardless of how good you are at creating a rapport. But then you have other players. I think Zach Randolph falls into this a little bit, at least in radio interviews I've heard. And sometimes he's just kind of is giving you the pat response, and then occasionally you can light him up on something and he goes. So I think that's one way to tell, you know, where relationships are. And a lot of times it's because, and this goes for any podcast, it feels like when you hear a really good back and forth, you think in your head, whether it's true or not, think, those guys must know each other. That must be a pre-existing relationship.
Yeah, you have to establish that relationship before you're going to be able to have that interaction with the player. And, you know, for young players especially, you know, I'm not to disparage the Grizzlies as an organization or any other organization, but organizations have gotten a lot more paranoid about warning players about interactions, and sometimes for good reason. There are some drive-by media that come in and look for a quote and then, you know, publicize the quote like crazy and make the whole thing – it just turns into a bad deal. So there's some reason to be a little paranoid, I guess. But some some outlets take it too far and some teams take it too far to the point where you can't even really get a reasonable discussion on something that's totally innocuous because they're worried about how it's going to be perceived or how it's going to be stretched. Or I remember having a conversation with Dave Yeager 2 years ago, I guess, probably after a Grizzly practice one day. And he was saying it. He's like, as you're asking this question, I'm thinking about what you're trying to do with this question. Uh-huh. And I said, okay, that's fine. I said, but maybe I'm not really trying to do anything with the question.
Yeah.
And then I say, but, you know, as you're answering, I'm thinking about what you're trying to do with the answer. So it was like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Why don't we just talk and just see what happens? And he thought about it, and he didn't take that advice at all, as it turns out. And so that always informed. If you hear his answers, they're always stilted, and he waits and pauses before it's not natural because he's paranoid. He's worried about how it's going to be perceived. Zach is like, you mentioned Zach. Zach has to be, you know, sometimes pulled back because he will, if he's in the right mood, he's very honest.
Mm-hmm.
But he has to be in the right mood, and generally he's not that interested in talking.
Sure.
That's mostly Zach. He's good for about a minute, mm-hmm. and then he just kind of – he'll actually just turn his back and just walk away. Like, he's like, whether you're done or not, he's done.
Yeah.
And some guys are different. Mark is kind of like, you know, he's better after a loss than a win,
mm-hmm.
which is funny, but that's kind of his personality. And if you really ask him basketball questions, he really gets into it. But if you better ask him a question. Like, Mike Conley, you could just say – basketball,
right.
And you hold the mic in front of him, and he's like, you know what, it's a great game, and I really thought it's fun, and we played well tonight, and he's happy to help you out. Or you could say, what do you think about Chandler? And he'll just, you know, he'll give you some kind of answer, and it'll be very well thought out, and it'll be nice, and it won't be too controversial. And Mike is a pro.
Yeah,
Mark is not going to do that. You say basketball, he's like, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what do you think about Chandler? I don't know, ask Chandler.
Yeah.
Is it a question? Are you actually putting a little question mark at the end of your statement?
You got to prove it to him a little
bit.
You
have to ask a question, or you have to be in an actual conversation. Mm-hmm. Then he'll do it. But like, if you're just a reporter and you're just like, you know, talk about the great win. Nope. He's going to be like, we won.
Yeah. I think people miss with players too. You're talking about the young players and how maybe some of the paranoia is justified. And people, it always bothers me when someone calls an athlete stupid or criticizes them for something in a post-game interview or just the way they sound. Now, if they say something that is offensive or something, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about players who are just uncomfortable, and from that, you insult their intelligence. Because, and actually, Blake Griffin did intros for a few nights at a comedy festival, I think in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so he did like a quick five that he had put together. I know he's really into the comedy stuff, but his thing was basically about, hey, you know, go run for 40 minutes back and forth, come over here sweating, and then let me ask you questions and see how composed you are. But a lot of it's just people are different. And some people, some people who you talk to and you know in your real life who are super intelligent, if you put a microphone in front of them and put them on a camera, they're going to sound like idiots too. So it's just, it is interesting. I think we just assume that all these guys should be super comfortable. And I think a lot of times, you know, maybe it is paranoia, and I know that's the case a lot. And sometimes I think it's just, you know, some people have a fear of that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I mean, listen, the other thing that everyone's very aware of what happened. Like back in the day, and way before my time even, I mean, when you were writing, like it was mostly newspapers and you had notebooks and there was not every interaction was filmed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that the camera changes everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't like to give away the farm here, but I would also tell people your interviews are going to be better if you do it without a camera.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to find a way to get non-camera because it changes the tone. As soon as someone's pointing a big-ass camera in your face, then you are going to lock up. You're not going to say the same stuff. You just don't feel – a lot of times they have the big-ass light that, you know, it's just everyone's squinting and uncomfortable. It's hot. You're not going to get anything from that.
I think a lot of people probably either have experience or know somebody that's happened when the local news gets you for some little bit somewhere on, you know, if
who
it's Black Friday
like
or whatever.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden that comes on, you feel like an idiot, and you watch it back and you think, oh my gosh, I wish I'd said no. And when they ask before the camera's on, you think, oh sure, I could comfortably talk about that. It doesn't work out.
My dorm, I had when I was in college, my dorm, the dorm below mine caught on fire and burned down, and I like escaped and ran out, and they interviewed me, you know, for the news, like 4 a.m. I'm, you know, whatever. I'm barefoot. I don't have shoes mm-hmm. on, which is always put shoes on, by the way, if you have to run from a fire. And I sound like an idiot. Like, I mean, because I'm stressed out. I'm freaking out. I'm like, you know, these flames are like dancing up near my windows, and my stuff could be burned down. And, you know, I can't even imagine what I sounded like in this situation. The other thing, too, Chase, is that these guys know they're being recorded, and they know these comments will be used mm-hmm. and seen and perceived in certain ways, which if you take that into account, now, you know, if you do, like, let's say at the end of your workday, whatever it is you're doing, you know, I'm going to interview you at the end of the workday, and I'm going to say, sure. how'd it go? And I'm going to ask you about a specific thing. What about, you know, at 1 o'clock when you, you know, logged in and you, you know, did this particular spreadsheet, you changed a couple things. Why did you do that? Mm-hmm. You know, and you're already mentally kind of tired to begin with. And you know that if you say something stupid, it's going to be out there quick. It won't take long. So yeah, you would, it under all those circumstances, I'm surprised actually that some guys are as forthcoming as yeah. they are, because it's not a conducive environment. Sometimes it's really awkward, honestly. Like, I mean, you stand around in the locker room waiting for guys to get dressed. Like, it's just a weird, they sort of force you to do it, but it's just strange. And some guys are very comfortable with that, and there's no problem. Just like when you go to the locker room, like, you know, at the gym or something.
Sure.
Some guys are just like fine with it, and some guys are not. None of it really lends to a particularly wonderful environment for great interaction.
Yeah. That we pretty much segued right into it, and it was a big part of the discussion we just had. But in general, I know it's not like you've covered other NBA teams, but you are our first guest who, you know, goes to availability in terms of practices, goes to post game, all that kind of stuff, covers the Grizzlies mm-hmm. on a somewhat daily basis. What are they like to cover? And I know you haven't covered other teams, so there's not a huge frame of reference, but we all kind of, if you pay attention, know reputations of different teams in terms of covering them.
Well, no, I've covered like different sports.
Sure.
Too. So yeah, there's a decent, you know, I can compare a little bit, and I can compare them to like teams of the past too. You know, mm-hmm. that's the other thing.
Yeah, there's been a lot of change. So
these guys, you know, I think they're not difficult to cover at all, and the problem has just been honestly that, you know, the organization's really paranoid about stuff, and I mean, just honestly, like that makes it very difficult sometimes to really get a good feel for what these guys want to say. I mean, because sometimes you have PR people that are, you know, and they're just doing their jobs.
Sure.
I like them all. I have a good relationship with all of them. But they are, you know, monitoring. They know they're monitoring everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone's just very aware of where certain people are in the locker room and what they're going to say and what they're not going to say and, you know, all this stuff. And that has changed a lot. It didn't used to be that way. And I think that's true, you know, anywhere in the NBA, really. So it's not just a Memphis thing. You know, that's as far as I have been told and my experience in other locker rooms, and it's very, very similar. So that just makes it difficult sometimes to, for your intentions, especially if you're just doing like just doing your job, it sort of feels like sometimes you're, you know, like you're under suspicion of like, what are you going to say? What's going to happen? You know, that kind of stuff. That can be problematic. The guys are fun to cut. Like, you know, Tony's great. He got crossways about that article mm-hmm. and, you know, we would have it out. And then like, you know, 5 minutes later, he's showing me pictures of like his kid on his phone. Like, you know,
sure.
check this out. You know, he's just, that's guys are, you know, they're very forthright, and they may not, you know, Mark and I have disagreed on lots of stuff. Mike, every now and then. You, as long as you're honest with, and as long as they know you, and they kind of you've established that you're going to be there, win or loss, that you're going to, then they're okay with it, and they're easy to cover. You know, there's nobody that's a bad. It's a great locker room in the sense there's nobody's a bad guy. You know, there's no problem talking.
Yeah.
No one's going to like try to intimidate reporters or any of that stuff. Everyone's good. I mean, I talked to Tony Douglas for a long time after he's. Great guy to talk to. I mean, mm-hmm. irrespective of my opinion of him as a player.
Sure.
And that's the hard thing to separate is some guys get caught up in the
– right.
Which I understand. Like, I mean, if somebody's like, look, Peter, you suck as a radio host and you suck as a podcaster mm-hmm. and you just – your numbers are terrible and they're giving this, like, you know, scrutinizing breakdown of everything I suck at. And then they're like, but look, man, let's talk. We can talk about it. Let's have a great conversation. I get that that's a little awkward, so I don't
yeah.
begrudge anyone for that.
I think that – you know, there's a tendency to call guys oversensitive and things, the guys that really take that stuff hard. And to a degree, I think it's true. At the same time, for any person, player, broadcaster, whatever you do, corporate world, your job is a big part of you. And so if somebody tells you you suck at it, I mean, I'd probably be pretty sensitive
too.
So I think it's understandable in one way. I will say that I think the guys who sort of get the game put themselves a leg up in terms of marketing if they want to pursue a career after this. And I mean, I think it's just you see guys like I think CJ McCollum is one who just kind of Reddick, who just they kind of understand what the game is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that really puts them ahead of it, not in just in terms of future career prospects, but in being equipped to handle it in the best way now.
Well, it's one of those things that you know the job that you've chosen, you know it's in the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a politician, you know that you're going to be scrutinized. If you're a professional athlete, you know you're going to be scrutinized. That's part of why you get the pay you get, because people pay to watch you play. So that goes along with it. That's just part and parcel of it. You know, most people's jobs don't entail that sort of thing, so they would be shocked if that were to happen. I get it to some extent on a much, much, much smaller scale. But
sure.
I remember when I was on the field representing our station at the Liberty Bowl one time, just for some, I don't know. It was like they did some announcement or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it was like one of those sponsors things. I honestly don't remember why. But I was down there for some reason for the game, and I'm walking off, and I was really young. I think it was my second or third year doing radio, and I just remember like walking and looking up, and I was like saying hi. I was trying to see if some of my friends were up there. I was trying to like see if I could find them. And Liberty Bowl. All of a sudden, I hear it from like way far away, like, "Edmiston, you suck!" And I'm like, I didn't know how to respond. Like, mm-hmm. That was like my first real like heckle. Like,
yeah.
Why would somebody say that? I'm not even, you know, I was sort of taken aback, and I thought it was funny, and I was like slightly offended. Like, wait a second. And I did, and that was one random dude in a stadium of 50,000 people. I don't even know what it'd be like if you're, you know, mm-hmm. Chandler Parsons, and you're hearing a hell of a lot more than that. But, you know, I also wasn't making $24 million either, so.
Yeah.
And I'm still not, sadly.
So you hit on it. I should have asked you beforehand. What do you like on time?
Oh, I'm good, man.
Okay. I just want to make sure. But you mentioned on.
I'll just pull Zach Randolph, just walk out.
There you go. Just turn your back, and I'll know.
The interview will be over at that point.
Swivel around
in the
chair. So you mentioned a little bit of organizationally, you know, beyond the players and how easy they are to deal with, you know, a little bit of the, whether it's paranoia or whether it's just wanting to run a tight ship. I think there's a lot of organizations that are more like that now, maybe than they used to be. I stress, we talked earlier about sort of the anecdotal evidence you get personally, and this could be the case with me. So you can tell me if you think so, but I feel like this season, and I'm going to pitch you some theories. You tell me if you think one or any of them fit.
Okay.
I feel like there's been less of, I guess I'll call it like leaky tidbits in terms of little pieces of information that aren't necessarily something that a radio host or a writer would go on record and write a full-blown article about. But just I feel like as somebody who loves sort of the inner workings of front office, team relationships.
Like the palace intrigue.
Absolutely, palace intrigue. Somebody who loves that stuff, I feel like there's been less of it. And so theories go everything from obviously, I mean, the elephant in the room, if we didn't mention it, would be Grind City, mm-hmm. and the creation of that.
Right.
I think it's possible maybe there's just less stuff going on. It's been a pretty hectic, crazy front office before this year in a lot of ways. Even once they seemed like they got it tightened, you still had some, you know, Jaeger friction with the front office. That was the other one. Or is it that the front office and the coach, everything is just sort of tightened relationship-wise up and down? I mean, what do you think? Do you think that's the case? And then if so, what do you – the other thing I would say is I think some media members locally have changed roles that sometimes were the providers of that little bit of information.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's part of it too. I don't know. What do you think?
So what kind of leaky tidbits do you want?
So
– give me like an example and I'll tell you whether
– well, so – if you want to go back to the beginning of the para era, there was a ton of stuff. But that was also national guys, whether it's the headsets, which we don't need to revisit, and all that stuff. In previous years, I would say how the players felt about Jeff Green in terms of when there was a lot of friction there in the locker room eventually. And then obviously the friction with Jaeger and the front office last year. Things like this year, and maybe again, absolutely – the answer to this question could be there's nothing to report and everything we're getting is true. But I would be interested in knowing if the front office across the board and everyone, when they signed Chandler Parsons, if they really thought anything like this was on the table for how long of a recovery, and if they really were truly pleased with his what he did from the time he signed to the time he came into camp, if they were really 100% pleased with rehab, whatever kind of management. And I don't know, again, I'm not saying that any of that's the case, but I just feel like those would be things we, the kinds of things we've heard about in the past, maybe not so much this year.
So I would say that your theories about that are probably true in all three cases. I do think that, you know, Grind City Media has the impact has been, it's mixed, interesting. It's, I get along well with all those guys, so mm-hmm. I don't disparage them personally, and I respect the Grizzlies' ability and right to do whatever they want with their own content. It's great.
Yeah.
It is, it can be a little problematic in certain cases. The access has actually been okay. They haven't had any preferential access that I can tell. I mean, mm-hmm. every now and then there'll be something, but it's nothing major. I think you'll notice that they haven't really broken any stories of import to speak of.
On your definition of import. I mean, the D-League
Tony
team.
Douglas and D-League yeah. team. I mean, the D-League team's probably the crowning jewel, I guess, mm-hmm. and that's not exactly – I mean, that's fine. But the important stuff, the Conley stuff, Woj got that, and that's the relationship that Woj has with front offices is a whole other podcast that deserves its own mention. But so I would say that's a little part of it, because they record more stuff, and I think it's changed the impact a little, it's changed the tenor a little bit, but nothing major.
Okay,
a little bit.
And I just
I was gonna say that the biggest thing I think honestly is that the front office really doesn't – there's not a lot of disagreement, as far as I can tell, at least. Everyone seems to be – if they're not on the same page, they're doing a good job of hiding it. Everyone's pretty copacetic. And then Fizdale, this is not – I don't know if it's been widely reported or widely discussed, but Fizdale has been – he brought in the culture, and he was brought in for the front office. I mean, he understands that he's part of this front office. He's not – he doesn't have – autonomous rule the way the mm-hmm. coach is used to. He has to deal with them, and he has to accept their situations, and I think that's part of what Chandler Parsons' situation is. I think I'm not sure how much control he has over that. But he's brought in, from the basketball side of it and from the locker room and everything else, a culture where everything is very regimented. Like, mm-hmm. for example, there's a hallway between the Grizzlies' locker room and the entrance where they come out to do their intros, where they come out to the players' walkway, like by the Lexus Lounge or whatever the hell it's called now, the Kelly English thing.
Yeah.
We used to be able to walk in there, no problem, media people, and you could interact. You'd see the players, you'd have little chats, whatever. You'd see the family areas in there. Fizdale's cording that off. You can't – no longer can you walk there. It's barred. You can't do that. The access to the weight room is very strict now. It used to be much, folks, other people could get access to it. Now it's strictly players. He's cordoned off. Everything is very, he's got like different, like, banners and murals and posters and all this stuff up. Everything is very, this is a Miami thing. It's very team is team. And like, that's it. Mm-hmm. So even some people within the organization can't get into, like, he's kept it very much in-house. So I think that is prevented some of this, because you see a more unified approach. So I think that's another part of it that probably has a lot to do with it too. And I mean, as much as these guys may have agreements, disagreements, whatever, there've been a few little, things here and there. That's the way it works any season, but they've kept it in-house, and it hasn't risen to the level of years past. I mean, there've been other instances that, weren't reported in years past, incidents, things that happened. And That happens throughout the course of a season. I mean, you're with these guys nonstop, 8 months, whatever. So that's going to happen.
Cool. The one thing I'll say, because I want to avoid sounding like, and I don't think I did, but sounding like I'm criticizing Grind City Media. If you follow me on Twitter, you may know I did a story way back for Grizzly Bear Blues.
It was a great story. I liked it. I thought it was great.
And that was sort of more about, that was before we really knew much of what it was. And that was focusing more on the journalistic side. But as far as it's weird, because when you say Grind City Media, it becomes all encompassing, and really, you have that journalistic side and dispersal of information, but I would say the majority of what they do is really entertainment focused. So like, I think Amar does an awesome job with the Twitter account. I like the video bits that Alexis does. Vernon has never been anything but super cool to me personally, so it's not a criticism.
Absolutely.
Of like the people who work
there.
I
get along, all those guys are great. Alexis has been a pleasure to deal with. Amara, same thing. Me and Vernon, very friendly. Fish, I've known forever.
Yeah.
Brevin, you know, I think Brevin's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Wallace. I interviewed Michael Wallace when he was covering Ole Miss for the Jackson Clarion Ledger back before he went down to Miami to begin with the write for the Herald. So I've known Michael for 12 years or more. I mean, so I like these guys.
Yeah.
It's nothing. It's just I have I have my suspicions and my concerns about what I think it's just it's a trend that we're seeing across the spectrum, not just in sports, politics,
sure,
too, of state-run media. That's what it is. I mean, you just have to look at it through that spectrum. It is state-run media. Anything that appears on it is approved by the state. So you have to look at it through that prism. It all has to go through vetting. You know, nothing just appears. It has to go through, has to be vetted. So if there's criticism of a player, then does that represent the organizational criticism of a player? Does that, I don't think you can get away from those issues. And I think they've been more thorny probably than they anticipated.
Sure.
Based on what we've seen. I think that's going to be a very hard hurdle for them to overcome eventually, is just how will that play itself out? Because I think fans picked up very quickly. Fans are very shrewd about this stuff and very smart, and they understand when they are being, you know, not manipulated, but they understand that the story is coming from a certain perspective.
Yeah, coming through a filter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to use loaded terms like manipulate. I don't think they're trying to manipulate.
Right.
I think it's just, it is what it is. Like, when you brought this thing into existence, you have to squeeze everything through that filter, and fans recognize that, and they recognize when it's not. And, you know, it's like the stuff with Chandler Parsons. Like, there's clearly, to me at least, and I have no evidence of this, this is just my conjecture, but it seems that there's been an organizational, you know, dictate, like, he's the hardest working man in show business. He's like, he's out there every day. Oh my God, if you just saw this guy working,
what a
it
grinder.
Would blow your mind. You'd be like, holy Lord, this thing is, I got it.
Right.
I get it. I said, the dude that works hard to me is like Tony Douglas. Like, I mean, he has no job. Like, his money wasn't guaranteed. He had to work and scrap and that's a hard working dude.
Yeah.
And if Tony Douglas is the fittest dude on the team, I promise you, that dude is the fittest guy. That dude's got like an 8-pack that's like, it's insane. That dude's the fittest dude on the team. It's not to disparage Chandler, but it irritates me on behalf of those other guys that work really hard too. And it makes their work seem lesser.
Mm-hmm.
It diminishes their work to say, this dude's the hardest working guy. He's the only guy here doing it. I promise you, these are all professional athletes. They care very deeply about their jobs. And so when you feel that, like, you know, when Pete tweets the thing out and then Fizdale says this and then, you know, they do the interview and it's like that concerted stuff, I think people pick up on that. There's a little spidey sense that goes off like, I'm not so sure about this.
And that's the way I felt about it. And obviously, you've said the same. Several other people who cover the team have said the same. I do wonder at some point, not that this makes it incorrect to discuss, because obviously I've discussed it a bunch, but I do wonder if there's somewhat of a bubble effect there, just because I think probably your average fan that I'm not interacting with, they're probably just like, as far as Grind City Media, A, they might not even know what it is. B, they just like the slow-mo videos and the video bits and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't know. It's always hard to gauge what really makes up.
Well, it goes back to what you're talking about. I mean, like, it serves different people
in
different ways. But what I'm talking about, or who I'm talking to generally is a more hardcore fan or a more conversant fan with the day-to-day goings on of the team. You know, if you want to watch, like, you know, wacky GIFs and, you know, slow-mo videos, I mean, those are great. I'm as big a fan of emoji as the next guy. But, you know, we're talking about different levels of stuff here. And the stuff about Chandler, it always just rankles me, because it's these attempts to sort of maneuver the basis of the conversation, when to me the conversation should be, why is this guy the only guy whose minutes can't be touched? Why are the other guys having their minutes jerked around, and this dude, you cannot move him from starting playing 8 minutes and then 8 minutes at the beginning, it's 20 to 25 minutes per game, and then, you know, if he plays them back-to-back, it's like, you know, hallelujah. Why? What evidence is there that he's getting better, or that he's going to get better, or that this is going to end well for this season? It's been 3 months of the exact same stuff every single time out, and he's getting worse, if anything. Why? So that's the question. Instead of, and then you respond with, like, well, he's working so hard, man. If you just knew how hard he was working, you'd understand how this makes sense. No.
Yeah.
It's not about working hard. It's not in the psychological stuff. It's a physical. He's just not physically healthy. Will he ever be? I hope so. I genuinely hope so. He's a nice guy. I've enjoyed my talks with him. But even on the conversation of, like, should he start? I asked Chandler 3 weeks ago. I said, why don't you come off the bench? And he said, I talked to him about it. I suggested it. And then Fizdale says, you know, the other day, well, no, we can't. We can't do that. It's not even a possibility. We haven't even talked about it. Well, no, I mean, it's been talked about. It blows my mind.
Yeah, there was definitely a company line feel to that one.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't very well disguised.
Because,
like you said, it was kind of like three or four different sources all with the same word usage all about the same time.
It's like the memo came out like, you got to talk about how hard he works. Like, let's just make sure you mention it in your next, you know, two or three tweets.
All
okay,
right.
I got you.
So we're going to get into the sort of rapid fire-ish, the slow rapid fire section. It's yet to be named, but I think next week, also another thing, I think next week we'll have intro music from a friend of mine who has a local band.
Are you going to be singing? Because you got quite the voice.
Nah, maybe on, we might have a little jingle for this segment coming up.
Beatbox?
Maybe, you know, this one might be newly named, Sir, I Want to Ask These Cues, to the tune of a certain song. So if you know what song I'm talking about, then good for you. We'll see you next week. Hopefully we'll have that.
That was vaguely threatening.
No.
You know the song. It's great. It's great. Great job. You know, fine.
Well, you get bonus points or something. You like hoops, 10 free Twitter dollars. Just DM me about it.
You like hoops?
You like hoops?
Do you like hoops?
So here we go.
Do you like hoops?
We'll do a few of the same ones we've done before, and I got a couple that are more specific to you. So you mentioned it, and I already knew. You listened to a bunch of podcasts, non-sports
mm-hmm,
podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a couple of your favorites, not sports.
Comedy Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. The legend, the amazing Comedy Bang Bang. I'm a big comedy nerd like that, so that... God, it's so good. It's so good. And you'll listen to Scott Aukerman and Paul F. Tompkins and all the, I mean, Jason Mantzoukas, any of the episodes, Andy Daly, go back to listen to the old Andy Daly. And I would suggest one particular podcast, if I could suggest one episode of one podcast. It was the Andy Daly podcast pilot project that aired. They released it probably 3 years ago on Earwolf. And the episode, The Wit and Wisdom of the West with Dalton Wilcox, where Andy Daly is Dalton Wilcox, is, you know, I don't know if it's to everyone's taste, probably to very few people's taste, I don't know, but it's the funniest damn thing. I almost killed myself driving listening to it. I was laughing so hard. It's extremely obscene, very offensive, but it's amazing. So that's great. Super Ego, those guys are really funny. Stuff like that. And then I listen to like a lot of the like Lexicon Valley, a lot of the Slate, some of the more like, you know, the stuff, the teaching type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to, I'd have to go and look to
those are good ones.
But
those
I like, but yeah, Naked Scientists is great. All kinds of stuff like that.
All right.
On the media. Always every week. Got to go on the media. That's an absolute must listen.
And I'll just say, because it's really easy to access on YouTube, I won't give you all the podcasts I listen to other than sports stuff, but you mentioned a podcast, a single episode. If you want a single moment, one of my favorites, top two or three, and you know it's sad when a person like has in their head a top two or three podcast moments. Like that
it's
is
not sad.
That's not an impressive social life there. But
you can listen to podcasts socially.
On You Made It Weird. Not You Made It Weird. I'm sorry. That's another one of my favorites.
Pete
but
Holmes
on
is, Pete Holmes is very funny.
Yeah.
Like Pete
but on... How Did This Get Made,
mm-hmm.
which is
another great one.
Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas.
Yep.
But if you Google something like...
what's up, jerks?
How Did This Get Made, BB-8, I think it'll pull up
yes.
the clip. And it is
when
just
June
like
is,
yeah, like two or three
oh,
minutes
God,
about
yeah.
June Diane Raphael's aversion
what is,
to
what is
technology.
Your mission?
What is its mission?
What is its mission?
And Jason Mantzoukas, I don't know. I enjoy him as much as any person in the comedy world. Just to listen to him talk, not
laugh.
Any
His
kind
laugh
of structure.
Is amazing.
Oh my gosh, yes. And him telling, if you follow me on Twitter, you may know I am a Gilmore Girls watcher
mm-hmm.
and a Gilmore Guys podcast listener. But he comes on there and told a story about running on a treadmill and just weeping to an episode of Bunheads. And I mean that. Oh, I love that guy. Jason Mantzoukas is the absolute best.
Oh, he's great. Zooks is awesome. Yeah. So that's. But there's many, many more.
I
listened to. Yeah, it was awesome.
Favorite NBA player of all time.
Penny Hardaway, I mentioned it. He's amazing. It was that 3-year run at the beginning was. Go back and watch the highlights. Crazy, crazy what he was doing at that time. Now, I mean, it's different now, but 6'8" and could pass like that and shoot. And there was a Memphis thing that was involved too that had like an extra little, something there. That's Penny's my one of my absolute favorites. Although probably my favorite. I used to love like sharpshooters. I always like the Glenn Rices of the world. You know, growing up, that was always my thing too. Because that's really all I can provide is sharpshooting. Can't dribble.
Least favorite basketball player of all time. Got one?
That's a great one.
Just for the listener too, Peter is the first guest that I did not send any questions beforehand. I figured he's a radio professional, a daily podcaster. We're going to see how it went.
So oh man,
he's, well, he's working off the cuff.
That's a tough one to think about off the cuff. I would say probably Hedo Turkoglu always used to bother me. His histrionics were insane. I would say the Gilbert Arenas also.
Yeah. I think you're the second person. I think Joe might have said Gilbert Arenas. Out of three.
Well, he was really good, but it was good in a very annoying way. I'm trying to think because that's a tough question. I would need to think about that more.
Those are good ones
to have my full memory jogged. I think that's probably about it. And then I never enjoyed Bo Outlaw as much as everyone else did. I'll say that.
It's a deep cut.
Yeah.
Favorite now maybe a little different for you, but somebody. Who it can be a writer, podcaster, TV analyst. Who is someone you just really enjoy to listen to or read in terms of just the way they talk about basketball?
I always listen to Zach Lowe. I think he's great. I love his style of writing is tremendous, and I think his podcast is good. He tends to get out of the way.
I was shocked. I would never have thought he would be as comfortable and natural, and I think really good on the podcast just from reading him. I thought maybe he'd be kind of a closed in. Dude, but
good dude. I like Kevin O'Connor, who I don't want to be like I knew him when, but I am a big proponent. I hyped up his draft. He used to do a PDF draft guide every year before he signed on with the Ringer. And,
didn't know that.
It's great. I had him on my show back 2-3 years ago, and. He's a great dude. I've enjoyed my interactions with him. Jonathan Yarks. I don't know.
Yeah, all
say.
Those.
That guy.
All those guys.
Those guys. Yeah, Yarks was. He was another guy that Starks. I don't know. I feel bad. I'm butchering your name. I'm sorry. Again, another guy that I really enjoyed his stuff. And then I like the pure id of Matt Moore. You know, Matt's a really nice guy. So I do like his. Twitter feed for just pure stuff, just emotions of all sorts.
What I'll say, I don't know how he maintains sanity, but he is a really good person to follow if you want to be broken out of your bubble of what NBA fans are, because the craziness. Oh. And I've had very positive and very negative back and forths with Matt, but I mean, the amount of just crap that floods at
crazy.
Him is unbelievable.
It's crazy.
Favorite basketball movie?
Space Jam.
Okay.
I mean, I think, come on. Is there another one?
I've heard of a couple, but.
No. Eddie is great. Air Bud. I mean, they're all good. It's, how can you pick? Juana Man. I mean, which one won the Oscar? I don't know. They all should have won the Oscars. Air Bud 2 is probably. Air Bud 2 was the one where he skateboards, right?
I don't know.
Jace, come on, tell me.
All I know is that Air Bud 1 was the movie that my grandmother told me she would never go to another movie with me because she hated dogs, but she cried at Air Bud 1. And, like, I think we told that story, like, sitting around after she passed away. It was the fact that this woman hated dogs in a way I've never met someone who hates dogs. And yet she was just – got a little teary-eyed at Air Bud 1.
So it's emotional when you watch. I think Air Bud – Teen Wolf is also great, too. I don't want
to
– but I think Space Jam is probably still the best. I mean, it's in the best pure basketball movie, too. They do a lot of great – I mean, some of the sets they run are really good. and I liked it. Learned a lot of X's and O's.
Numbers game coming your way.
The Monstars were devastating.
Let me see here. did you play at any level? This can be pickup. This could be elementary school, middle school, high school, whatever you need it to be. Greatest personal basketball moment of you playing on the court?
The greatest personal basketball moment was when I played, I was in a, a charity event or something with former Tiger and Cleveland Cavalier Cedric Henderson, who I attempted to get a shot off on him, and he just embarrassed me in front of everyone. And it was so funny that I actually think it's because I have so few other great or any even good or even average or even adequate moments on the court that that's probably the most notable one. Although, I think hitting a three, big three to help give us the win in a Grizzly media game one
that's
time
huge.
On FedEx Forum, that was big as well. But no, I think the Cedric Henderson thing is pretty awesome. I will say also to the there was one time I was playing a, 3-point knockout competition or something with another media member, and playing horse. Maybe John Martin, now that I think about it. I'm trying to remember last year or two. But we're playing and we're just god awful. Sorry, John, you're terrible.
He's going to take that personally.
Yeah, that's fine. He knows it. And I was pretty bad also. But I noticed that there are two Grizzly players that are watching us from the upper area, like the Grizzlies, the court, as it offices, like Chris Wallace's office overlooks the practice court. They were watching us and just laughing hysterically. And I felt that it's nice for them to be able to just critique our crap-ass basketball performance. And I felt like I owed it to them, really, because, enough of me, pooping all over your game. You can feel free to make fun of me.
There you go.
I give them something.
All right. Here's one we haven't done yet. You have
although Lionel Hollins did say I had a great shot.
See, I thought you were going there. As you were telling that story, I was thinking, I swear I've heard him say that Hollins told him
he said it was perfect. In fact,
he said it was perfect.
Jump
shot.
He said I could see why you criticize people.
Yeah, you were talking about so many different moments that for a moment I started to question myself if that was really you. And
no.
So I didn't want to bring it up. I
don't like to I don't want to brag too much. But and listen, if anyone knows great shooting, it was Lionel Hollins, obviously, with the Grizzlies.
Oh, yeah.
Teams known for their great shooting.
Do you have a favorite, or it could be underrated, follow on Grizzlies Twitter?
I don't know how to properly rate the follow, so I wouldn't know about underrated. This is the answer that I feel like would give me trouble. I don't want to be all diplomatic, but there's like different folks for different things.
Sure.
Like I enjoy amongst all the very well-regarded fans who know what they're talking about. I love. Katie Forbes' passion for it. She's always fun. I love the interactions that you see with Matt and you and Jonathan Lindsay's fun. I think Salil Gora is good. I love him.
Awesome.
He's a very, very smart guy.
The account's locked, but if you send the request and get through, that's an awesome follow.
Oh, he's great. But a lot there's like tons. Like I don't know, I feel like I'm leaving people out. I don't mean to leave people out. I'm just I've got a ton of great folks. I love the all the GIF work that Philip and those guys at the Fox Sports feed do.
That's a good variety.
There's tons. Like I said, I feel like I'm leaving people out, but I follow lots of you, and if I don't follow you, send me a message and I will. I just I lose track of who I follow, honestly.
Yeah.
Like so.
And I will say at least one of the people you just mentioned has me blocked, but there's always time for healing. So, I mean,
who has you blocked? You can't just say that now. Come on.
Katie Forbes.
What?
There was
Katie's great.
I will tell this story as quickly as possible, but there was a night about, I want to say 3 seasons ago, where Nurkic just was giving Mark the business, and we were getting slammed
by the
Nuggets.
Boogie, one of my favorites.
And I logged on. I was at dinner or something. I just wasn't watching the game.
You logged on to the internet.
I logged on to the internet.
You dialed in.
I did.
Okay.
And got on Twitter, and all I saw was we were getting crushed.
Okay.
I turned the game on at the same time. The first thing I saw when I turned on the game was Nurkic smack the ball right back into Mark's face on a block.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all I saw on Twitter were, these refs are terrible, the worst refs I've ever seen, da 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 da. And I said some snarky thing about fans and complaining about refs. And that, I mean, I've probably done that before. I could have gotten away with it. But then when I mentioned that I had not seen any of the game, and so didn't actually know how bad the refs were, I mean, it was a firestorm all night. A bunch of people blocked me that I still find myself blocked by. I mean, people told me that I was just garbage and like were subtweeting left and right. I mean, I never saw it coming.
I've never blocked anyone on Twitter.
I block people constantly.
Why?
Not people I interact with. I will leave.
Why
Matt,
do you block people?
Okay, so Matt and I did a little bit of politics. I will not go into it here. But safe to say during election season, any interaction I saw with somebody who was just being purely hateful towards someone, I blocked him preemptively. So there are people probably that like come across a tweet of mine and have no idea because I've never talked to them. But that's mostly who I blocked. But
I've never blocked anyone. I don't understand. Like I don't. It's not me. Like I can't. I don't know. Just let it go. Like if it's my, I got some weird stuff that pops in my mentions all the time. And it's okay. People don't like, that's fine. People criticize. I've got most random criticisms ever. People I've never, I don't know why you're even going after me. It's just, you know, I don't know. Like, it's just teach their own, man. It's the, God bless you. I've never muted anything, and I've never blocked anybody.
I don't mute. I just block. But honestly, I don't know that I've ever blocked anyone. I'm sure I have. I shouldn't say that. But very, very small number of people that I've blocked who I actually have interacted with. It was mostly just like, I just kind of derive pleasure from thinking, this person is going to see their blocks by me when somebody with way more followers retweets me at some point in the future, and they're going to be so confused. So it's just the tiniest bit of satisfaction.
Maybe you just randomly block people for that reason.
Very last thing. What is the non-sports thing you consider yourself the biggest fan of? For purposes of this conversation, fandom, something you love and engage with beyond that thing itself. So maybe it's you own memorabilia or you read criticism of that thing, whether it's film or TV or something like that. Or something you just find yourself defensive of. You love it that much if someone else criticizes it.
I would say probably in general comedy, like as a whole. There are sub-genres of that, but I find myself very interested and very into many different aspects of it, like we talked about the podcasts. So that's a big thing for me. And also, one of the weirder ones, but I really like it a lot, is language, linguistics. I read a lot about different, like, you know, just how we got to this point, studying English, studying other languages. Usage, like I'm a real word nerd like that. I know it's hard to imagine, but that's I really enjoy that stuff. So I read, I've got tons of books on different language aspect, like different. I'm a big nonfiction reader. I'm not so much a fiction reader. I probably should be, but I'm just not. But nonfiction, I've got so many. You know, I've got I will look through like usage guides and like, you know, just read. And I find that fascinating to me, like why certain languages have certain things they perceive certain ways and others perceive it differently. Like how we got to this point, like I've been learning Spanish for the last, you know, couple of years. You know, my kid's learning, you know, Mandarin and like stuff like that. I'm deeply nerdy about, you know, subjunctives and that kind of stuff. Like I get down the rabbit hole real quick with that stuff.
That's one of the reasons I love hearing Mark talk about basketball. He's obviously a really thoughtful guy, but I think a lot of times non-native English-speaking people use words in such a different way to describe things that I almost think it gets at the essence of the feeling of what they're trying to say better than we do with our own language. That's one of the reasons I love,
he's great.
Love hearing him talk.
I'm so jealous of, you know, polyglots. I'm so jealous of people that can switch. And he can switch like on a dime.
Yeah.
Like he goes from Catalan to Spanish to English. Bing, 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 like, no problem. That blows my mind. I'm so impressed by that. So I wish I'd learned at a younger age because it's hard. It's hard to pick it up.
Yeah.
I minor in German. I'm decent German, but I'm trying to learn Spanish, and it's a neat deal. So that's, if you want my nerdiest, like most, that's pretty nerdy, but I'm into it. I love it.
Awesome. All right. Well, that will almost wrap us up. There's one thing I forgot. I said that when we introduce a new question, I will answer it. So my answer's on record.
Oh.
Very good. On the Twitter follow. I don't know. This probably doesn't count as underrated. It's funny, like you said. What I guess I mean when I say underrated is not, you know, some big media personality in the Grizzlies community. But if you don't already, and probably you do, but if you don't already follow Me Tweet, and I can't remember the exact Twitter handle, one of my absolute favorites, and almost every weekday she posts a lunch that she makes her son that is like in shapes and it has themes and a story behind it. And I told her once.
My wife does that stuff too. It's
yeah.
Something.
I told her once I was not exaggerating when I say, like, there are mornings where that's just like a little pick me up to start the day. Is like
that's
there
awesome.
Is a theme to her lunches. So you should follow those. Also, she's hilarious about basketball and other things. But
I
anyway,
don't know if I follow her, I should do that. You should, give me her, shoot me her.
I think it's Me Tweet Grizz, but we'll figure it out for sure. Anyway, that will just about wrap us up. Thanks so much for doing this. It was a lot of fun.
Was this good? I can't. It's hard for me to tell.
There's no way to know. Yeah, okay. We'll let the people
we'll
decide.
Find out. That's
whatever
right.
People say on Twitter, that's the answer, right?
That's right.
If we've learned anything.
God, I'm going to be anticipating. I can't wait.
Give us those likes. Anyway, thank you for listening to episode 3 of You Like Hoops. We will see you next week. Thanks.